Today on Maine Calling, your vote 2025. Question one on the November ballot. If you see the political campaign signs popping up all over Maine, you might be confused about the purpose of question one on the November ballot. The yes signs say, pass voter ID. The no signs say, save absentee voting. Is question one about requiring photo ID of voters or changing Maine's absentee voting rules? Well, both. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we talk with the leaders on both sides of the issue about the details and what they see as the impact of question one on the November ballot. It is a timely discussion as early voting is already underway in Maine. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville, and by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Down East communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. If passed, question one on the November ballot would require voter photo ID and change absentee ballot and drop box rules. Today, we're going to hear from those supporting the measure and those opposing it. Joining me, Alex Titcomb, who is campaign manager with Voter ID for ME, or Voter ID for Maine, which supports yes on question one. And David Farmer, campaign manager for the Save Absentee Voting Coalition, which opposes question one. We invite you to join the conversation. Are you confused about what's included in the question? Tell us what you're confused about. Ask us your questions. Send an email, a brief email, please, to talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to both of you, and thank you so much for being here. Alex Titcomb, it was your group that proposed this, so I will start with you. At its heart, what is question one about?
Yes, thanks for having me today. At the heart of question one is the, you know, new requirement to show photo voter ID when a voter casts their ballot. It's about securing our elections, increasing trust and confidence of every voter that their vote is being cast by them with the proof of voter ID.
All right. So about securing our elections, and I want to stay with you for a minute, Alex. What makes you believe that Maine elections are not secure?
So I see this as a future-looking policy. I'm not a politician, and politicians didn't propose this initiative. It's being done by hundreds and hundreds of citizens that are volunteering their time. And we're looking for what do our elections look like in 10, 20 years from now? It's not in a response to fraud. It's to, you know, make our elections stronger, better. Increased confidence is always a good thing in our democracy.
All right, David, I think you'd agree with that, that people want to have confidence in our democracy, yet you oppose question one. Why?
Well, I don't think question one has anything to do with increasing confidence in our elections. You know, Maine's elections are safe, they're secure, they're efficient. And when it comes to question one, you know, I know we talk a lot about voter ID, but the 11-page proposal includes a whole list of other items that will make it much harder for Mainers to vote absentee. Absentee voting started yesterday, and it runs through Election Day. Question one eliminates 2 days of absentee voting and puts a whole lot of restrictions on the process for people who count on that method to cast their ballot.
All right. Well, Alex, let me ask you that. Why not have this ballot measure only be about voter ID? Why add the other provisions?
Yeah, so I lead the largest, most active conservative group in Maine, and we're a membership-based organization. And, you know, we listen to our members. So it was a collaboration of regular citizens that care about elections that came together around the table and proposed different ideas. And this is kind of where we, settled on with the changes that we're proposing in question one. There was a variety of other things that we could have done, but we felt this is the best way forward at this time.
All right, so I'm going to sort of break down this package a little bit, and I want to start by just talking about the voter ID part of it, and then maybe talk about the absentee voting part of it. Alex, let me just ask you, come back to you and ask you, why do you believe voter ID will make elections more secure? Anybody who has been between the ages of 18 and 21 knows that there are a lot of, for example, fake IDs out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I don't think I'm alone in the thought that voter ID increases confidence. It's 80% of Americans support this basic principle. 36 other states have a form of ID in order to cast a ballot, and we're looking for Maine to be the 37th state. It's, a common sense thing that IDs are used for everything in our society, banking, buying things at a pharmacy, grocery store. Why not use it when we do our most important civic duty in casting our ballot?
Well, David, Alex makes a good point. We use our ID all the time. It does seem like common sense. Why not?
Well, we use our ID when we register to vote already. Look, when you place a new hurdle on people voting, you reduce the number of folks who are able to participate. And even if you support voter ID addition to our election laws, this one is not a particularly good voter ID law. It limits the IDs that are acceptable, which takes particular aim at members of tribal communities and students. It requires you to either send your a photocopy of your driver's license or include your driver's license number when you vote absentee. This is it's not a great law. And I was looking at the documents, and you can use your passport card. Well, I have my passport card, and I looked at it. It has my name and picture, but it doesn't have my address. It has the place where I was born. I was born in Virginia. And then on the back, it says it's only valid for land or sea crossings in a number of places. Now imagine your election clerk, your election volunteer on election day, seeing an ID that's supposed to be valid, and it actually says not valid for anything but land and sea crossings. This is a bad piece of legislation, a bad proposal that throws the kitchen sink at Maine's successful election system.
All right. David, I'm going to stay with you. Who in Maine is likely not to have the kind of ID that would qualify in a voting booth in Maine?
The most likely folks are people who are elderly, who are seniors, who no longer drive, or people with disabilities.
All right. And Alex, I'm sure you've heard the criticism that people say this is designed to limit who can vote, especially groups that might not vote for the Republican side. What do you say to that?
I say that it's fear-mongering. It's using a subsect of population for political gain, and I think it's abhorrent. Our proposal requires, it uses the word shall. The Secretary of State shall provide an ID. So the burden is going to be on the Secretary of State to make sure that every voter that wants to cast a ballot gets an ID, and there's no cost to the voter that currently may not have an ID. As our society is moving and advancing, there's technologies out there that are going to make it easier for folks that don't currently have a valid ID to obtain one between now and next June's election.
Yeah, that's if you're someone with a disability in Greenville and you have to travel 50 miles, 60 miles to the nearest BMV to get an ID, that is a real burden. And it places that burden squarely on the person. They have to get there. They have to make that happen. It's not fear-mongering. You got 45% of Maine voters in the last election used our absentee voting system. And of those, about 60% of seniors used it. So when you put new restrictions on absentee voting and ID requirements, you're targeting the people who use it the most. It's not fear-mongering on our part. It's a simple statement of fact.
Well, let's talk about that provision of it. I'm going to come back to you, Alex. It would limit absentee voting. It would limit, not eliminate absentee voting. And I'm going to go through some of the ways I understand that it would do so, and correct me if I'm wrong. One of them is would make the window shorter, eliminate 2 days. Which 2 days would be eliminated, Alex, and why those 2 days?
So the word eliminated was proposed by our Secretary of State. You know, she was the one that crafted the ballot language, and then you know the opposition campaign is you know kind of using those as well. The proposal moves the last day of early voting by up by 2 days. So instead of it being cut off at Thursday before election, our proposal puts it at Tuesday before election.
Okay, and
This the
why?
same day same day that you know clerks can start counting the ballots. It increases, you know, confidence in making sure that absentee ballots get there and back to, you know, get to the voter and back to the town office before the deadline, as we see decline in our mail service. And it gives the clerks 2 extra days to process and get ready for election day.
All right, and
Jennifer,
then go ahead,
Dwayne
David.
Young, who is the then president of the Maine Town and City Clerks Association, which is a statewide organization of the folks who run our elections, said plainly in the Press Herald that these changes are unnecessary, and that the people they will hurt the most are those folks who are homebound, who have disabilities, who have trouble getting to the polling places. 2 days, the Wednesday and Thursday, are two of the most popular early vote days in the state. You take those away, and people will miss their opportunity to cast their ballot.
All right. Alex, I want to ask about some of the others. Making sure each town can only have one drop box. Why?
That's already in existing law, so it's really not a big, you know, big change. These are minor changes. Current law requires only one per municipality. And it allows for an exception. A state or a town could apply for an exception from the Secretary of State for additional drop boxes. Our proposal, you know, gets rid of that exemption and keeps it at one per municipality.
I live in Portland. We're one of the places that has the second drop box. It's closer to the north Deering neighborhoods in the city, away from downtown. So our two drop boxes are at City Hall and then at a city facility, kind of in the North Deering neighborhood. Again, it's about making it easy for people to cast their ballot. The ballot drop boxes are secure. They're located in secure places. It is a system that works. Portland is bigger. You know, perhaps if you're in Bremen with 862 people, one drop box is appropriate. But in Portland, with 66,000 people, and City Hall downtown, it's perfectly appropriate to have a second place to drop your ballot. After all, on election day, we have five precincts, districts in Portland with multiple places to vote. So, you know, it's not unusual for towns to be treated differently in terms of how many polling places they have and the accessibility that they provide to their residents.
All right. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address talk@mainpublic.org. Alex, have you talked to local officials at the local election officials in small towns across Maine about this provision, and what is the feedback you've been receiving?
We did not talk to local officials or politicians in Augusta to put this together. Like I said, this was is a citizens initiative. A group of regular Maine people came together. It's something that has been failed to be passed by the politicians in Augusta. So, you know, we're using our constitutional right to petition our government, place it before the Maine voters, and Maine voters will be able to vote yes or no if they want to increase our security, improve our elections for future generations to come.
And if this were to pass, it would go into effect January 1st of 2026, correct?
Correct. Yep. And that gives
So,
the Secretary of State plenty of time to inform the public, increase the some rules that they're going to need to implement, so that we can make sure that everyone can vote for the June primary election.
I want to go
And it
back to a
would be in
point.
effect, Jennifer, sorry to interrupt there. It
Yeah,
would
go
be in
ahead.
effect for the important midterm elections in 2026, when the potential for thousands of people to have their ballot not counted or not cast because of these changes. You know, it's a clear effort to reduce the number of folks who can participate. And in Maine, we take our participation in elections very seriously. We are often the number one or number two state in the country for voter participation. These changes are unnecessary and a burden on folks who are busy and trying to go about their normal lives and participate in our democracy.
Yeah, Alex, I want to go back to a point David made earlier in the program, and that was about what kind of IDs would be allowed and not allowed under this. Is he accurate in that tribal IDs and student IDs would not be permitted?
That is correct. Yep. A state, you know, government issued state ID or federal ID, you know, these are the most uniformed pieces of identification that we have across the board. And it, you know, allows everyone that, you know, to participate in the process.
All right. Well, our phone number again, 1-800-399-3566. So many calls coming in already. So I encourage you, if you try to call and can't get through, to try again. Also a great way to reach us, talk@mainepublic.org. We're talking about question one on the November ballot. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're talking about ballot question one and how it would change state election law. With me today, David Farmer, who is manager for the No on One campaign, and Alex Titcomb, who is manager of the Yes on One campaign. We invite you to join the conversation. What do you want to know about the specifics of ballot question one? Have you been following this debate? Send a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. We'll start with Chris, who's calling from Sedgwick. Hi, Chris, go ahead.
Hello. Mr. Titcomb claims that this is ordinary Mainers who have come up with this Yes on One campaign. But I've noticed that in the Maine Monitor, the Yes on One is easily four times what the spending on the No on One campaign is. And I'm assuming, I think I know, it's mostly out-of-state money coming to change election law in Maine. These groups sponsoring the Yes on One are groups, conservative groups, aligned with Project 2025. And this is all part of a movement to suppress the vote in the nation generally, state by state.
All right. Well, Chris, thank you for calling. Alex, what's your response?
Hey, Chris, thanks for the question. I absolutely love it. You might want to look into the ethics reports that just got filed yesterday. The No on One campaign, the opposition campaign, has raised well over $1 million. They've actually spent about $1 million and have $1 million in the bank. The finances, they have way more than Yes on One, our campaign. Both sides, both Yes and No, are getting funds from out of state. That is pretty common in Maine politics. But the Yes on One campaign is drastically being outspent by the opposition campaign, Chris. Thanks so much.
Yeah, and David, do you want to say anything?
Yeah, I would just say, Chris, that the graphic, I saw it this morning as well, and I believe that that was put in the Maine Monitor prior to the most recent ethics reports. Mm-hmm. And that's not to defend Alex on this. You're absolutely right. They're the big bad wolf blowing on our elections. But it's much closer to parity at this point in terms of elections. And we're really proud of the strong level of support that we're seeing from in-state donors to the campaign.
All right, Chris, thank you so much. Let's see, we'll go to Louise, who's calling from Auburn. Hi, Louise, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Yes, both of us are elderly, and I was listening to the gentleman state that it hurts handicapped people and elderly people. I fit both of those. My husband had a stroke almost 5 years ago. He's been in a wheelchair, and we're older. We're in our 70s. But I don't find it hard to have an ID. I'm glad he's been able to get an ID. He cannot drive anymore. And I find it to be a lot better. He votes absentee ballot. I don't think that's going to change. He's still going to be able to do that. But putting an ID up, we've had to have an ID for everything. We've had to have an ID for Social Security. So I feel insulted when someone tries to tell me that handicapped and elderly people are hurt by this. It just blows my mind, because we've had no problem getting an ID. The state has provided him with a non-driving ID, and it's how can he insult me and the handicapped people, telling us that we're unable to get IDs?
Louise, thank you for calling. And so, David, you can hear that Louise is frustrated. Your response?
Well, I'm sorry, Louise. If I insulted you, that was not my intent. And I'm glad that the system as it is today is working for you and your husband. And that's what this question is really about, is making sure that we keep the voting system in place that works for nearly a million Maine voters right now. The restrictions may not impact you, but I spoke with a man, Bud, the other day. He's 82 years old. And at the end of his wife's life, when she was ill and homebound, and he was her caretaker, using the absentee voting was the only way they could participate. And so I really happy that the system's working for Louise, and I want to keep it that way, I want to keep it that way for folks that these changes would not work for as well.
All right. And I'm guessing, Alex, that you've heard from others like Louise.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think Maine people are smart. They're rugged. They have a good, strong work ethic. They'll figure out the new voting laws and get their ID so that they can continue to vote in person or absentee just like they do today.
All right. Thank you, Louise. Here's an email from R. R writes, if an ID costs money, wouldn't this be the equivalent of a poll tax? Alex.
Just like I mentioned before, our proposal puts a burden on the Secretary of State's office. They shall provide an ID, and it will be free to the voter, so there is no poll tax.
Yeah, well, there's no cost to the ID, but you still have to get there. You still have to wait in the line. My son right now is preparing for his driver's test. The soonest that he can get an appointment for that, I know it's not the same thing, is in December. So, you know, when you talk about the tax, it's a tax on time. It's a tax on effort, and it is and can be a significant burden for folks who have trouble with transportation or getting around.
We'll go to Robin, who's calling from Pembroke. Hi, Robin. Go ahead.
Hi. So Alex talked about how this is to solve a problem that admittedly doesn't exist now, but will exist maybe in 10 or 20 years. So we've got this future problem we're trying to solve right now that isn't a problem right now, even by the nonpartisan League of Women Voters, who says that, you know, Maine already has safeguards in place. However, we are creating a problem now for people who depend on absentee ballot voting, which I have for several elections because I'm caretaking a person who needs caretaking out of state, and I'm often not in my town. So it would really affect me. And also, when they talk about, you know, the IDs, it's been mentioned before, it sounds good that you need an ID, but there are many kinds of IDs that won't even be accepted. The tribal IDs won't be accepted. Student IDs won't be accepted. It's solving a problem that doesn't exist to hurt voting for people who depend on absentee voting now.
Alex, what about this, solving a problem that doesn't exist?
I think that's a fallacy in one's, you know, thinking process. I think it's, you know, pervasive in our political situation where we think that needs to be a problem for government to come and solve. That's not the case here. This is a group of citizens that came together that want to increase the transparency, accountability, and trust in our elections. There does not need to be a problem to make something better. You know, that's American dream. We want to work. We want to work hard and increase and do better and better. And that's what question one does for our elections.
You know, earlier this year, some conservative groups in the state accused 51 Mainers of voting inappropriately. Different allegations depending on the case and point. All 51 were cleared of wrongdoing. Maine's elections are safe, they're secure, they're efficient, and people participate. We don't need an 11-page proposal that changes the nuts and bolts of that system. Our elections are working. There is no problem.
Robin, thanks for your call. We'll go to, Portland and Dick. Go ahead, Dick.
Good morning. Recently moved to Portland from St. Louis. Experienced a lot of voter suppression initiatives in Missouri and was disappointed to hear in a recent debate the substance of this amendment. The bottom line that I see is that in a nice sounding, all you have to do is show an ID is a Trojan horse for a lot of voter suppression initiatives that don't meet the eye. So that's one. Number two, even though the money may be even, it would not surprise me if the big money on the proponent side of this is not coming from some of the same people that are behind Trump and 2025. I'd be interested in David's comments as well as Alex on both of those points.
Well, I'll go first to Alex. Go ahead, Alex.
In regards to the finances, obviously, the if donors are donating to a Republican organization, they would most likely probably also support Trump, who is our current president of the United States of America. And in regards to our finances, the Yes on One finance, our finances are much more transparent and open. You know where the donors are coming from, unlike the opposition campaign that is using dark money nonprofit organizations to shield their donors. And we have nearly $1 million of this kind of money flooding this campaign and trying to oppose what 800 citizens put on the ballot in a historic signature gathering effort. 170,000 people signed on to put this forward. And it's not just about voter ID. It's about increasing the confidence, transparency, accountability of our elections, closing some loopholes so that an in-person ballot and an absentee ballot is treated the same.
David, Alex says that your organization is accepting what's referred to as dark money. Is that true?
No. Look, we're a nonpartisan campaign. We're not a Republican organization. We're a coalition of a lot of different groups who have come together to oppose question one. And I just want to call out that Republican lawmaker Joyce Maker in Calais recently posted on Facebook. She said, when I was approached to sign, I thought this was about voter ID. And so I signed it, even though you have to show a voter ID to register to vote. Then she went on to say publicly, but when I found out all the other things are in here, I was appalled. I'm urging people to vote no. So, you know, the notion that that the 800 volunteers went out and this was a grassroots effort, a lot of people did not know what they were being asked to sign. And I would just encourage every voter, not to take my word for it or to take Alex's word for it, but to read the question that's on the ballot and see the list. And if you have a few extra minutes, go to the Secretary of State's website, read the full legislation, all 11 pages of it, and see all the changes that they're proposing.
Dick, thanks for your question. Here's an email from Marianne. It is currently a Class C crime in Maine to impersonate someone to cast a ballot in an election, punishable by up to 5 years in jail and a $5,000 fine. Why would someone take that risk to cast a single vote that's unlikely to change the outcome of an election? Voter fraud is nearly non-existent. Maine elections are safe and secure. Question one is a solution looking for a problem. Alex, I think Marianne's point is it's already pretty daunting, and you're facing some really serious consequences if you do engage in voter fraud.
Yeah, absolutely. And rightly so. I can't speak to the intent of that individual that she's asking the question about. But I do agree that we have strong, secure, safe elections in Maine. Like David said earlier today, we're at the top of the charts for voter participation. And question one is not going to change that. We're going to continue to get out the vote. We're going to continue to engage in democracy and getting a variety of voices in our political sphere. And Maine voters will continue to vote in person, absentee ballot. I suspect that, you know, the trend is continuing to increase in absentee voting. I suspect that that trend is going to continue. Maybe next cycle we're going to be at 50% absentee ballot. Maybe it's at 55% absentee ballot. Question one will not change safe, secure, and, you know, strengthening our elections.
Here's an email from Eva. You are not required to change your address on your driver's license when you move to Maine. Will that be an issue at the polls, as I do not live at the address on my license anymore. So, Alex, I'll go back to you. Under this provision, does the address on that ID that you show, if it has an address, need to be in the town where you are voting?
It needs to be a valid photo ID. So like that was mentioned earlier, passport doesn't have your current address, but a passport will still be allowed because it has your name and your photo of your ID. In regards to the driver's license case, I do believe Maine law does require you to update your driver's license when you move. I'm not 100% sure of the legalities around that, but I do believe you do have to update your driver's license.
And a related question, Ellen on Facebook writes, real IDs only needed if somebody has the old-fashioned driver's license and has not upgraded to a real ID, that would also work, correct?
It's not real ID only. It's a state driver's license, the state ID, U.S. passport, U.S. military ID. So it's not just real ID.
In-person voter impersonation, when someone goes to the polls and pretends to be someone else, is exceedingly rare to non-existent. All this is doing is going to create longer lines, confusion on election day, and it's the clerks and the election volunteers who are going to bear the brunt of figuring all this out on election day. Maybe you don't vote absentee, but it will impact every voter in the state.
I want to ask you a broad question, Alex, a sort of philosophical question. You've stated over and over again that elections are secure in Maine. You're not questioning that. And I'm wondering, but you're also giving up a big part of your life to run this campaign, to collect these signatures and pass this ballot initiative. Why is this such a big deal to you if this is indeed a place where elections are secure?
It's a big deal to me because I care about, political campaigns and campaigns. I care about improving systems. I care about listening to the people, my donors, my members, the folks that I, get humbled that I get to lead or they follow me. And, it's something that the membership spoke up and wanted to put this before Maine people. So I am sacrificing, yes, months of my time, about 15 months now, to this cause and this effort to enable people to participate in democracy even better.
All right, we're going to go to Carol, who's calling from Cushing. Hi, Carol, go ahead.
Hi, thanks. That last comment he made is really interesting to me. I question the validity of the initiative, the petition itself, as it was presented at the last voting session that we had in Maine. When I spoke with the woman who was asking voters to sign her petition, she refused to provide any information at all about the organization, about who she was, about she refused to answer questions about the initiative. She was just very, very vague about everything. And she simply really was asking people to sign things. And as we all know, people tend to sign things without really reading them through or knowing exactly what it is that they're signing. So my question, there are two parts to this, actually. One is that why fix something that doesn't need to be fixed? We have a really secure system. I think it's an insult to most of the communities or all of the communities in Maine to even present this initiative with the suggestion that there could be something wrong or that they're doing something wrong. And secondly, I certainly question the validity of an initiative when it's clothed in secrecy. And people are unwilling to tell a voter what that initiative is really about.
Carol, thanks for your call. Alex, I'm guessing you don't know which volunteer she's talking about, and you can't address the conversation that she had. But what would you like to say to Carol?
I can't respond directly to that situation because it's. It's months beyond us now, but I can say that the burden on someone signing a petition is on the person signing. You're petitioning with your signature. You're saying that you're petitioning the government to put this ballot question on the Maine ballot so Mainers could vote. We were not hiding things. The petition, the executive summary is on the front page of every petition. Every voter is allowed to ask for it to read the petition, and no one on our team would have declined a voter asking to see the petition that right.
Well, I'll just jump in. I can't speak to this one petition gatherer. And because, you know, as someone who works on campaigns, you know, sometimes your volunteers don't get it exactly right. You know, that's just the reality of a grassroots type effort. But I will say that the Yes on One campaign spent tens of thousands of dollars suing the state to try to change the ballot question that will appear on the ballot this November, because they did not want all the elements of the measure included in that question. So while I can't speak to that volunteer, there has been a little bit of bait and switch going on the yes side when it comes to the ballot question and the elements of this proposal.
Carol, thanks for your call. We are going to go to a break. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You do have time to send an email in if you'd like to. That's talk@mainpublic.org. We are answering your questions from about question one from folks on both sides of the issue. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are hearing the arguments for and against Maine ballot question one, and that is the one that is about elections. It would require a photo ID for elections and would make some changes to the absentee voting process. With us today, Alex Titcomb, who supports Yes on One. He is with the organization Voter ID for Me, or Voter ID for Maine, depending how you read it. And David Farmer supports No on One. He is with the Save Absentee Voting Coalition. Share your comments and questions. Send us an email, talk@mainpublic.org. You can also post, if you're quick, on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Rick, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Rick. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I am a lifelong resident of Maine, and I'm not seeing any issues. I don't understand exactly, and I'm kind of smelling a skunk. But here's my question. I vote absentee in Portland by calling City Hall. They mail me a ballot. I fill it in and mail it back to them, and I'm not getting what would change, and why is this currently not working?
All right, Rick. Alex, I'm going to turn to you. What Rick does, calling City Hall and asking them to mail him a ballot, would that change under this measure?
Yeah, it would change. In your case, you know, question one gets rid of absentee ballot requests by phone. It's kind of hard to provide a photo ID while you're talking to someone on the phone. And it closes this loophole and increases paper trail, just like we have paper ballots in Maine. We believe, question one believes, that we should have a paper trail of every absentee ballot request as well. So, you know, 15,000 voters voted by or requested their ballot by phone last year. Those 15,000 voters will, you know, find way to request it by online application or the paper form that you can still call the town clerk and ask her to send a paper form to request your ballot when question one passes.
All right, you know, David, Jennifer, I'm sure this is Rick. I was going to say, I'm sure Rick's example is what you've been talking about.
Well, it's certainly one of them. You know, one of the things we know in Maine, as we've worked on bridging the connectivity gap and expanding broadband, is one of the biggest hurdles to people taking up high-speed internet is not being comfortable doing business or working on a computer. So yes, you can go request an absentee ballot on a computer, but if you're not comfortable with that, if you're someone like Rick who's used to calling your town clerk, who probably knows you, and requesting your absentee ballot, that goes away. So there is another hurdle. And for those 15,000 people that Alex mentioned, some portion of them are not going to complete those steps and are going to be disenfranchised.
Rick, thank you for your call. We'll go, let's see, to Paris, Maine, and Janet. Hi, Janet, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for this program. I think it's critical. I can tell you that I've lived in my community for 30-odd years. I am an active political participant. I was at the polls when they were working on this, you know, these petitions. People were climbing all over themselves to sign because they thought it was just voter ID, which it isn't. When you read the whole thing, there's far more to it. And I think the bottom line is making, because it, you know, if you disenfranchise voters and you make it more difficult to vote, they're not going to show up. And if they show up, they're not going to wait in line for hours. And this is where we're headed with this initiative. Vote no. It is.
All right, Janet, thank you. Alex, are we going to have longer voting lines if and when this passes?
I don't believe so, no. Like I said earlier, absentee trends are continuing to increase, and people are voting earlier more and more. And I believe that trend will continue. So the lines are actually going to get shorter in-person voting on Election Day.
So David, you're trying to make it harder for people to vote absentee, but people will use it so that in the ID requirement on Election Day won't create new hurdles. That just doesn't pass the straight face test. Of course, adding an extra step on Election Day is going to create delays. And of course, if you eliminate 2 days from absentee voting and you require someone to put a photocopy of their driver's license in with their absentee ballot and you don't let them call the town clerk and you take away a drop box, of course fewer people are going to use absentee voting. That's the whole point.
I would disagree, sir. The proposal is to improve our elections, not to get less people out to vote.
Yeah, but Maine's elections work. I mean, it's proof.
Absolutely.
Our elections work. They're safe. They're secure. They're efficient. We don't need to fix them.
It's not about fixing anything that is currently wrong. It's about making them even stronger. Yep. 36 other states have voter ID. New Hampshire is our closest neighbor. They have voter ID, and they actually increased their security around absentee ballots as well this past year. And let's have Maine be the 37th state and continue to lead in the nation of civic engagement in our elections.
Well, let me ask you this, Alex. Did New Hampshire see the number of people voting go up after passing this law or go down?
In New Hampshire's case?
Yeah.
Well, it's a fairly new law. The absentee portions that increased security around those ballots is brand new. So there's not.
It hasn't been tested yet. David.
Yeah, I'm not a bit interested in making Maine more like New Hampshire. I like Maine. I like our election system. I like the fact that we're one or two every election year, whether it's a presidential year, a gubernatorial year, an off year like this year. Our people turn out, they vote, and they participate.
All right, David. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to move on because we have so many questions coming in. Here's an email from Cynthia. Since no one can vote in Maine without being registered, isn't the real question what identification is required to register? David, do you know the answer to that?
You have to have a photo ID to register.
Not necessarily. You have to have two forms of ID, and neither one has to be a photo ID.
So you can take a bank statement and a electricity bill.
Yep, CMP, and that's very common on Election Day.
All right, let's see here. Oh, boy, so many questions going in. Let's see. We'll go to Peter calling from New Gloucester. Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm just concerned about the huge amount of data that the state will then be responsible for as far as trying to determine, people's identity. And then who's going to be responsible for trying to police that? I mean, if people can hack into this stuff now so easily, we're going to pick the bill up for that as well. I mean, this is just adding insult to injury for no reason. There's no problem. Why can't we continue the way we are? I mean,
so Peter, I'm a little bit confused. So already most people in Maine do have a driver's license. Your point is if we require people who do not to have a photo ID, we're more susceptible to being hacked?
Well, no, but I mean, if you have to maintain a whole separate database for the voters, other than, you know, you've already got the list of people, of their name and address when you go into the poll, and you give it to them verbally, that's already one set. So is it going to be worked off of that, or is it going to be a whole other set of data that's going to be collected in order to verify their identity?
All right, Alex.
No, there's no new requirement for any additional databases or government to have extra data. Government, your town officials already have your driver's license, your property tax records, everything about you. Government already knows. Thanks to Secretary Shena Bellows, you know, recently she has merged the central voter record system with DMV, and you can do automatic voter registration at DMV. So your license and your vote is already kind of tied together. And that's why it's, you know, the next step is to provide a photo ID upon casting your ballot in yes on one.
All right. An email here from Cheryl. My mother lives in Milo and she's 84. She has to go to the BMV in Bangor. She was turned away at the door 3 times due to such heavy turn up. When she did get in, it took her over 3.5 hours to be seen and get it done. She then had to get documentation from her doctor's office sent over and took many phone calls and follow up and went on for almost 6 months. She started this process in May. She just received her driver's license in the mail last week. This is truly a grave hardship for many, many people. I'm going to go back to you, Alex, because I think this actually just repeats a point that David has made. What would you say to Cheryl?
I would say to Cheryl and every other voter, that is a great example of how incompetent our current Secretary of State's Shena Bellows is. That is a failure on her leadership and the department that is responsible for running the DMV. And I believe that we can get a better governance. We should, as citizens, demand a better governance, that these issues be fixed. It will, and that's what question one does. It will provoke government to respond. It'll provoke campaigns and nonpartisan nonprofit groups or dark money groups to respond and engage with citizens to make sure that every citizen that wants to cast a ballot will get a form, a valid ID, and will be able to cast their vote.
David.
For someone who says they're not a politician, that sure sounded like a personal political attack against an officer of the state.
It's part of the problem. Failure of government, that our DMV lines are so long. That's not a citizen's problem. That is the people that are administrating that program.
Then you probably should have brought a ballot question to increase staffing at the Bureau of Motor Vehicles and not a ballot question that undermines our election system.
Okay, we'll try to squeeze in Scott calling from Wilton. Hi, Scott. Go ahead.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. And as I'm listening to this, I did hear David mention that there's people who may like, you know, contacting the local official at the town office and the town clerk and having the ballot sent to them. And I just still think that and perhaps there may be some obstacles for people that may not want to go, you know, online and do it online. But anyone can still call that town office and talk to that same town clerk and just have that ballot sent in the mail. And although you talk about obstacles about going to the other side of town for a drop box, I don't think walking down to the end of your driveway to get to a mailbox is really an obstacle for anyone.
So, Scott, is your point that you think it's risky to have the system that there is now, that it that does not seem secure to you, that people can just call and ask for a ballot?
I still think there is still you're adding variables into it where there are potentially things that can happen that are not as you intend, and there's just grounds for completing these incorrectly. And some question, and again, I think a lot of the public does have some concerns about that, and I think it would put those concerns at ease. And I just see no problem with doing something by mail if you want to. There's plenty of opportunities for that. There's also plan ahead for voting on the day of, and that's maybe what a lot of people like to do, part of the experience. But if not, I'm certainly am fine with absentee voting. I think there's many people that will utilize that, and
Yeah, Scott, we're tight on time, so I'm going to turn to David Farmer on this. But I'm sure Scott's not alone, David, in thinking that just being able to call up your clerk and ask him to send you a ballot doesn't sound that secure.
Well, but so requesting a ballot and having the ballot counted, there are multiple checks and balances in there. The ballot has to be included in an envelope that has a tracking number and a signature. The address that you send it to has to match the voting files. This is a system that has worked for years, and there are no evidence of a voter impersonation that I can point to or that Alex can point to. You know, if you may think that one element of question one or the other, maybe you think they're acceptable, but we don't get to pick and choose. The proponents of this bill put forward a long list of things, and we should check them all out.
All right. And just about 10 seconds, Alex, would you like to respond to that?
I agree with what he said, that every citizen should check out the ballot question, the ballot language that's on the Secretary of State's website or Voter ID for Me website as well.
All right. Well, thank you both for joining us for the hour. And I apologize to all of you whose questions we were not able to get to. A lot still there. David Farmer, campaign manager for the Save Absentee Voting Coalition, and Alex Titcom, campaign manager for Voter ID for Maine. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy, Maine Calling produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we are going to talk about food insecurity and what is being done to end hunger. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.